So I was sitting behind my house with my buddy Tyler, sitting on the couch we have out there. And we were talking about what kind of people might make for an interesting phone call. You know, like people, the kind of people out there that have done interesting things that I might actually be able to call and then record it and put it on the radio. You know, like people behind various cultural phenomena, like people who invent things that we use all the time, or like jingles that we all know. Tyler said, "By Menon."
Speed stick, the white stick.
By Menon.
Who wrote By Menon? Turned out it was written by a guy named Doug Katsaris. From the pictures I found, it looked like he really enjoyed wearing Hawaiian shirts, and he had great long hair and round glasses. I started reading his Wikipedia page and I was like, wow, this guy's been on albums by Cher, Rod Stewart, Gloria Estefan, Michael Bolton, Elton John, Aerosmith, Shania Twain, B.B. King, Peter Frampton, John Denver, Peter, Paul, and Mary, playing piano and writing music and stuff. He won an Emmy for some reason too. But all that stuff aside, he's most famous for three notes.
By Menon.
That jingle has been referenced by Family Guy.
Hey Lois, you see that barn out there? You know who it was built by? By Mennonites.
Seinfeld.
Who stands up?
And The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
We got us a new front in the war on terror.
By Yemen.
Try and get that out of your head.
He's also the musical muse of someone named Supreme Master Chin Hai. The Supreme Master is the spiritual leader of a worldwide group of vegan, I don't know, something. Doug doesn't seem too sure about that either. But anyway, she's apparently very wealthy and considers the writer of the By Menon jingle to be her musical muse. He was also a guest on Oprah once for some reason. Bubblicious paid him for something one time. He had dinner once with a man whose job it was to kill poachers somewhere in Africa, I think, hunting the poachers. When he listened to Bon Jovi's first album, he was pretty sure that some of those high notes were actually sung by him. He did this all with an outstanding mustache that he calls the W, and he said, "Sure, you can call me."
Dougasaurus is what I wanted everybody to call me in high school, but they didn't.
Oh, well, let me tell you, we're calling you Dougasaurus over here. Yes. The reason why I actually thought to look up who the writer of By Menon is.
Yeah, why did you do that?
Well, we were sitting out, my friend and I were sitting out on what we call the white trash patio behind my house. It's not really a patio, it's just like gravel with a couch on it.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's a little fire pit there and lawn chairs and stuff, and we hang out there quite often in the summer. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I gotta brainstorm some people to contact. And he said, what about the By Menon jingle?
And that's up in Canada.
Right. And I saw your picture, and you had the mustache on the picture that popped up on Google.
Yeah, yeah.
And you look like an awesome dude. And I was like, okay.
I was an awesome dude.
And then I continued to research you using my advanced research techniques.
Right.
And it looked like you had done a lot of cool stuff. So that's how this happened.
Well, that's very nice of you.
So you've won an Emmy, conducted the New York Philharmonic.
Boston Pops. Not the New York Philharmonic. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, you know, I make up about half the stuff.
There you go. I've conducted several orchestras, but not the New York Phil.
Okay, no. Okay, no. All right. But you did conduct the Boston Pops.
Yes.
All of my people at Wikipedia, they keep me informed.
Yeah. Just keeping up to date.
Anyway, you've done a bunch of stuff with all kinds of musicals, including the 1977 version of Hair.
Which I starred in as Burger.
As Burger, yeah. So you were getting naked and stuff?
I was indeed. Although it wasn't about that. And interestingly, in the script, Burger leaves the stage at the naked part and then comes back on as a cop and busts the cast. So it was when I... There were several of us revolving playing Burger. When I wasn't Burger, I was definitely naked.
Okay.
I was mostly naked anyway. I mean, I think I wore a... I started the show in a loincloth, you know. We used to say it was the home of the Whopper. And then we would correct ourselves to Junior Whopper. Extra pickle.
Extra pickle. And was there the secret sauce as well?
Secret sauce. There you are.
And then you went on to do stuff... I don't know. I guess you're still doing musical things. But you also did a whole bunch of studio work with the who's who, really.
Yeah, a lot of... I've got 20, maybe two dozen gold and platinum records of things I've worked on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, for example, Cher, Rod Stewart, Bon Jovi, Michael Bolton, Elton John, Aerosmith, Shania Twain, B.B. King, Peter Frampton, Christina Aguilera, Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Not Christina Aguilera. I don't know where that came
that
from.
That was on Wikipedia.
Well, somebody made it up. I'll have to go fix it.
I should just add some more names to that to make you seem more impressive.
What the hell?
The last line in your bio can be, he talked with famous Canadian radio host Lyndon Fraes.
Megastar Wikipedia researcher.
That's right.
Here's the thing about my Wikipedia thing is that I was in a band back in the 80s called Balance. We got fans around the world. One fan... young fan in Germany is a songwriter, and he said, I've written some songs, you want to hear them? And he sent me some songs, and I said, you know, all this needs is a piano part, you know. He said, well, I'm okay if you put one on. So I put a little piano part on, and he said, oh my god, I love this, so this is great, could you do some more?
Yeah.
And I went, sure, why not? Takes a an hour or so, you know, I just fool around, and no pressure. And he said, and in return, maybe I can make a Wikipedia page for you, because, you know, Wikipedia doesn't want you doing your own.
Yeah, I see. Okay, yeah.
So I said, sure. You know.
And you're still doing freebies like that, even at this stage in your career?
It's got to be about playing the music. You know, it's not. Look, I make money. I make plenty of money because I have residual income on commercials or television themes or records that I've done. But if I only did work musically, then I would mostly only be working on other people's things it's like corporate, you know. It's like there's no, it's not joyless, but it is certainly, you know, there's a deadline and there's, you know. But if something comes up and I like it and it doesn't matter and it doesn't hurt me and I have a free weekend, you know, what's the problem? If somebody says, a friend of mine, an old friend of mine who sang jingles for me or who worked on a record with me or something, said, would you mind playing a song or something? Of course. No, I have no problem with that. Or I love to play. You know, the price is feeling like they owe me for the rest of their lives. That's the price.
yeah. But I guess I'm a little surprised that you don't have this long list of projects that you just would like to get to, but you don't have the time, like whether they're paid or not.
I've gotten to a lot of the projects I wanted to work on. I've climbed Everest several times, you know. I've written a Broadway show. I've conducted a symphony and conducted a show. I have been on television. Now I'm on the radio with Lyndon Fraes.
Lyndon Fraes is how I say it. But you can say it however
I know. Froze.
Froze is good too. Actually,
you can make
I like
P H R A S E, seeing as you work in the radio and
yeah,
all.
Yeah, the phrase that pays.
Nice. The turn of phrase.
Turn of, yeah, that could be the name of the show.
Turn of phrase. Oh my God! That could totally freaking be the name of your show. Turn of phrase. Oh my God, that is fantastic. You know what? I work in jingles.
You.
I work in advertising, and I am telling you, that's a winner.
Yeah.
Turn of phrase. That's brilliant. That's like naming a store Staples. That is, which is the most brilliant name ever, I think, for a store where you go, I need the basic things for my office. I need the Staples. Oh, Staples are also little things that I use in my office. They're Staples. Oh, oh my God, that's a perfect name!
Now, on Doug's biggest claim to fame, the Buy Men and Jingle, I'd heard at one time that he was challenged for the rights. It was in question whether he had actually written that song or not, and that was a problem if he wanted to get paid for the licensing of it.
All right, yes, I remember that. Okay, well, there was a thing, but I was able to prove that I was the writer without too much difficulty because I know where that you don't think that By Menon would have taken any thought, but that was actually the 12th one that I wrote. I wrote almost, I don't know, I seem to remember writing about 40 of them. You know, it was By Menon, you know, right? Or By Door Slam Menon, or Menon, you know, right? Whatever it was, you know, and number 12 was the By Menon. But there was a little song that went before it. And if when you sing By Menon, how do you sing it?
By Menon.
Right. You see how long you held that by?
Yep.
It's not By Menon. It's By Menon. And the question was, why was that by so long? And, you know, the answer was, I don't remember. You know, it just is, I think it's, I'm just trying to find something hip to do. By Menon. And I went, that's not it at all. There was a little song. It's very tiny, 6 seconds. That's the song. So it's da 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 By Menon. So the by started on the fourth
beat. The measure
beat.
Before.
Of the measure before, and went to the second beat of the next measure. It actually goes over the measure. Banu 3 4 1 2 3 4 1 2 3. You know, right?
Okay, and you would only right? know that if you know
you
the rest
know
of the
if
music.
You wrote it.
Yeah, and so
about that other piece of music.
So, but back up. Like, why was there a dispute about this in the first place?
Well, I worked at a what they call a music house. Some call it a jingle house, but some call it a music house. There are usually four or five writers, a stable of writers, if you will. And there was me, and there was another several people who have gone on to fame and fortune. I don't want to name any names because I don't.
Why
want
it'd be fun?
This yes, it would be fun, but I you know. Want to remain alive. And I don't mean to disparage anybody. And so there's no names, but they many of these people that I've worked with in these jingle houses have been very famous for some reason or another. Anyway, one person just sort of when we sang By Menon, we all got in and sang together. And when we wrote By Menon, you know, I wrote in my little room, they wrote in a little room, he wrote in a little room, she wrote in her room, and then we'd come and we'd lay all these, you know, 100 things down, and other companies would lay 100 things down, and the Menon people finally picked my number 12. But then we all just went into the room the next day and sang it in 12 different keys. By Menon, By Menon, By Menon, By Menon. So, and we were all a team, and then we moved on to the next thing, and we all started making some things. And the one person was a very successful writer, and over the years just imagined that By Menon was their creation. They just said, I guess it's, I think I wrote it. I probably wrote it. It doesn't come up until somebody says, you know, we want to license this. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, I guess. Well, for example, Family Guy wanted to license By Menon so that they literally could say By Mennonite. Even though they could say By Mennonite, if they wanted to do it in tune By Mennonite, they have to, the music is not public domain. Someone wrote it. Seinfeld, you know, I'm having a By Menon moment. By Menon, you know, he said it's as easy as, you know, saying By Menon, going on this date with this person and paying for it. It's like a By Menon, By Menon, you know, and they had a whole episode about it. And what else? There's been a couple of different times when people have wanted to utilize the melody. John Stewart used it. He said By Yemen, right? You know, so anyway, they have to pay for that. So when I called this other person, and I wrote to this other person, and I said, you know, you have the rights to the song, but I wrote it. And this person, bless them, said, I don't really remember. I thought I wrote it. But if you think you wrote it, I said, I don't think I wrote it. I wrote it. It has been the basis of my every conversation that I had with somebody. Oh, my bio ends with, oh yeah, and he's the guy who wrote By Menon. You know, it just
after all this stuff with the Emmy Awards and all that.
Part of my, whatever that. And yeah, by the way, he wrote By Menon. This person said, okay with me. And all of this person's lawyers said, don't do it. But it was done.
And the proof is that you knew the rest of the song.
I knew. Correct.
How did you get into all of the studio work that you did?
Well, one thing leads to another. So first it was having a girlfriend that had slept with a famous person, having the famous person like me, put me in a band, and then record and have the engineer say, oh, you're pretty good. And I said, yes, while we're doing this, do you mind if I write a string arrangement for this thing? No, go ahead, write a string arrangement. Oh, that's pretty good. Would you like to do a string arrangement for Aerosmith? Because they're working in the next studio, and you're here now. Sure, I will. And the Aerosmith guy says, oh, that's really fun. You know, my friend is in Kiss, and he's doing a solo record, and maybe you'd like to play some, you know, strings for him, or some synthesizer with them, because they don't play keyboards. And sure, and the engineer from that put me on a live record, you know, and then somebody from that. And then I, you know, through all these things, one of the producers is Phil Ramone, and he says, I could use you for Frank Sinatra and Gloria Estefan and blah, 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 because I need someone. Like, for example, my whole career, besides being working with, you know, tremendous people one at a time, just by who you know, has also been incredibly bizarre, out-of-the-box gigs. That why would anyone else do it? I just seem to fall into it, and I feel very lucky for that. The Frank Sinatra duets albums, for example. You know, he sang duets with all these terrifically amazing people. But what people don't know is that it did not happen that way. What happened is the orchestra and Frank Sinatra re-recorded the songs with Frank Sinatra in an isolation booth. Then
They re-recorded them. So there was some kind of scratch recording?
Well, they recorded them. In other words, they were all songs that Sinatra had done before.
Oh, I see what you mean by re-recording.
The Foggy Boys in London Town, da-da-da-da. Or, you know, they're all songs. So they recorded them again. He was like, you know, I've recorded this again. Why am I doing this? And it's like, we're going to, you know, we're just going to do it. Trust us. And he recorded in Los Angeles. And then those were shipped to New York. So it was orchestra on two tracks, Sinatra on one track, and a blank track, and a microphone, and me, and Phil Ramone, and an engineer. And you'd hear, you make me feel so young. And then we'd pull down Frank, and I would push up my fader and sing, you make me feel there are songs to be sung. And then
you're improvising these, like,
right,
counter melodies or
and
harmonies.
Wonderful, yeah. Things to be sung. You know, I'd make up some harmony for the song, and we'd go back and forth, and we'd finish the song, and then, you know, and then we would send that to the artist who would then learn what I did and then go into a studio in Paris or into a studio in, you know, Munich or into a studio in, you know, St. Paul or wherever and sing their part.
So it was sort of like Sinatra and Dougasaurus.
It was very much so, to the point where it was so astonishing when all of a sudden they were starting to play it back. Let's see what we have for this song. I went, wait. And I remember phoning my father, because he loved Sinatra, and saying, you're not exactly going to believe what you're about to hear. And there was me singing a duet with Frank Sinatra, you know, in the studio. And I got my dad to hear that over the phone, which was a miracle for me.
I'm going to stop the recording just for a second here and point out that clearly it isn't just weird, random connections that make a career like Doug's happen. You also have to be quite good, of course. But it is true that a lot of musicians are quite good. The other thing Doug said he thought might have helped him is the fact that he's a peaceful guy. He's a happy guy. And people like being around that. He also said that he's not precious about what he plays. If he plays a part one way and someone says, do it this other way, he doesn't say, well, actually, if you listen to it, you'll see that I played it that way for a reason. He just says, okay, how about this? That's pretty rare. It's not necessarily better to do it that way than to have a strong vision that you insist upon. But it is pretty hard not to have an ego about what you're creating. And considering the type of work he was doing, mostly helping other people realize their projects, it's easy to imagine that attitude going a long way. And I respect it a lot. Okay, back to the recording here. I asked him how he came to be writing and playing music for big TV ads and stuff, like Diet Coke commercials. At least one of those Diet Coke commercials included Elton John. He said it all got started via a Timex commercial that his one-time bandmate, Pepe Castro, was working on.
He wrote a little song for Timex that wasn't going to go anywhere. They didn't like it that much. And, you know, he was like, so they said, but we need an orchestration for this. And all the other guys that we normally hire are busy. Do you know anybody? And he called me. He said, I need an orchestration for this tomorrow. Can you do it? Tomorrow, yeah. Woodwind quintets and, you know, a little rhythm section and stuff and cute. And it was some silly song, you know, 318 never looked so fine. And wait till you see 1129. That's Timex. We're making time look good, or, you know, some little cute little song. Pepe wrote that. I guess I was I 23? First jingle I ever did. And so I wrote this little woodwind quintet version of it, and the client loved it. And all of a sudden, the song that they were almost not even going to, you know, put out there became the winner and went on the air, and I was in. And then the next thing I did was something for Chevrolet, and I won as a writer. And then the next thing was AC Delco is the way, and I won that. And I won, and I started winning things. And then somewhere in the next year was By Menon.
You did something for Diet Coke, right?
Just for the taste of it, Diet Coke.
You wrote that?
I did.
The Diet Coke was with Elton John, right?
Yes. Here's the thing. We wrote the spot. And they were going to do it with Elton John and Gladys Knight. On that midnight train to Georgia. Women on that midnight train to Georgia. Or whatever. Well, anyway, the old, big, enormous, before you were old enough to listen to music song. Very big deal, Gladys Knight and the Pips. However, she was a solid woman, And for a Diet Coke spot, they wanted someone a little less solid. And they fired her. And they got Paula Abdul instead, who was the hip young choreographer for Janet Jackson. So now an American Idol. So they had already put down a version of the song, but it didn't fit. It was more R&B, and they needed it to be hipper. So we went into the studio and replaced the drums with a drum machine, and we needed to replace the piano part that Elton had played. And I was called in to do that. So I replaced his part. And then when they did the commercial for Diet Coke with the Louis Armstrong and the old movie stars sitting at the bar with him.
This is a second commercial now?
They just called me and didn't even bother to ask Elton to play the piano part. I just went, we're just one for that real refreshment, one. Just one calorie just for the taste. Diet Coke. It was a similar song. And I played that part. And then the funny thing was when he was working on Aida as a Broadway show, he made a concept album. One of the songs was he had Shania Twain singing. He wanted her to do it. But he had played the thing, and he apparently said, I wasn't feeling so good when I wrote it, and I don't think I played very well, and it's not in her key, and I don't want to play it again. Who's that guy who keeps playing piano for me? And I went in and, played my Elton John best in his style, the piano part for this tune that Shania Twain sang on the Aida concept album.
Why didn't he want to play it over again?
Why should he?
I don't know, because he loves playing like you do.
He loves playing. When he writes things, so I've heard.
And it's his concept album.
It's his concept album. So I've heard he writes things very quickly. He wrote Lion King in a week. Or something, everything that's in that. Something like that. He sits down, he writes, he's done. That's how he spends that 1 week, he does that. So
wow.
He put it down and he was finished. And he's like, it's not her key, I didn't play very well, I don't know what to do. Get the guy, you're in New York, I'm in London, get the guy. So that was me.
He was on to something else in his mind already.
He's moved on. And I'm cool with that. I got a little credit. I think other musicians.
That's one of your other nicknames.
And my other musicians. That guy,
He said that actually happened a lot. Other musicians. That Frank Sinatra album he wrote all the duet parts for that he was talking about for those famous singers. No credit.
One of my mantras, I have a couple of them, and one of them is we play music, we don't work music. I want to play some music. Nobody says, I got to work some music.
Do you play life in general?
I try. I do. I do try. I'm trying to have a good time, Sometimes I mow people over while I'm doing that.
How so?
Oh, no. I'm not going to go into that.
No.
Were you my therapist, I might.
You have too much energy and you dominate the conversation or what kind of thing?
There you go. Exactly it. I used to speak more than I listened. And you learn a lot more when you listen. And people think you're more interesting when you listen to them. Because they think you're more interested in them. And therefore, they like you more. Wow, he was fascinating. he must be really smart, I hope I said the right things in front of him because he didn't say anything. I'll tell you a story. I was at a dinner with Jolynn Turner, singer for Deep Purple. Judy Collins, the great Judy Blue Eyes, sweet Judy Blue Eyes, Judy Collins. A fantastic world-class music producer. A man who was a hunter of people who were poachers in Africa, and his job was to kill the poachers.
His job was to kill poachers.
Kill poachers.
Like in real life, that was his job.
In real life. And this was one of those, you know, crazy, the people you meet in your life dinners.
Wow. I'm very curious about that man, but you should go on with your story.
We learned a little about him, but I did not learn as much as I wanted to because of the story. On the way to this dinner, I was young. I saw a woman, young woman, hitchhiking on the road, and I picked her up. And thinking I might get lucky, I said, hey, you want to come to dinner? You know, there'll be a lot of cool people there, and we can, you know, learn a lot about life. And we'll just listen and have a great time, and everybody will love us. She said yes, this hitchhiker. And we went to this dinner, and we're doing pretty good until Judy Collins starts talking about this time in her life when she was, and it was very private. I think it must be, again, in the world by now, because she opened up at this dinner and she didn't say, don't tell anybody. So it must be part of her biography. But she was bulimic for a little while and had everything that she could possibly ask for, and still there was unhappiness. That happens to many, many, many people. She opened, and it was very deep, and she said, this was a time, it was like a blackout in my life. And at that moment, the proper thing to do would be just to keep your jaw from hitting the floor and maybe get up and give her a hug or something. You know, just silence is the best response to something as deep and beautiful as that. And this girl I picked up said, I remember a blackout a couple of years ago. I had just plugged in my toaster and all of a sudden the lights went out. Ha! I thought I caused it.
What? She was just, it was like blackout made her think of this thing that in her life.
That was her, you know, part of the conversation. And at that, I said, thank you very much. We have to go. It was so wrong that I just left. That was the end of it. And took the person with me. And that's the thing. You don't want to talk. You want to listen. Unless somebody asks you, and then tell what they say.
I'm looking forward to sunshine.
So anyway, you did all this really cool stuff with all these impressive musicians. Like,
correct.
Really, like,
correct.
Amazing. And you did it all with a really cool mustache, it looks like, too.
I did. Most of it was with a fun mustache. I call it the W.
The W, okay.
Like Chester A. Arthur, you know.
It looks like you've also done a lot of this cool stuff in like leopard print shirts and things like that.
Most of my stuff is large Hawaiian shirts. Print. There was a time when I only wore black and white. I thought, I guess I'm a colorful enough personality that I don't need colors. But then, you know, the black and white I had would be like a black suit coat with white feathers on the back, or, you know, or a tire track across the front, or something. I mean, it was all bizarre enough anyway. You know, you live as a brief instant in my life, I was on the edge of a rock and roll star. And I, you know, I lived it to the fullest. Mostly it's just personhood now. You know, I don't have anything to prove anymore. Very few people are impressed with me when I walk into a room.
So was there a time when you were thinking about your fashion choices as some kind of, like, this is my personal brand way of thinking it, or this is how I need to represent myself to make a splash? Or was it just because you liked those kinds of shirts?
Yeah, I did want to say something with clothes because I could. But now I'm just trying to hide behind my clothes now. It's different, you know. I was young and adorable, and now I'm just a guy. You know, it's an interesting thing that happens. You cross a line, you know. I mean, there are people, I imagine, who, I can't believe I'm talking about this, who might think I'm adorable, like you're adorable. But now I'm not out to do anything, to get anything by being adorable, if that makes sense. I like working on a project that I'm proud of. I've been going through a lot of life changes, you know. Who am I trying to reach? You know, what am I trying to say? And then I realized I'm not trying to say anything or reach anybody. Just, you know, I'm just happy playing music.
Thank you very much for all your time.
All right, my friend. Well, that's it. Next time I'm in Winnipeg, you're going to see me knocking on your door.
Everyone's going to be excited to meet Dougasaurus.
The guy who wrote the music for The Tick and By Men.
That's right. And thank you for listening. On this episode, you heard music from the Crooked Brothers, Apparat Organ Quartet, Royal Canoe, Holly Ruth, and right now you're listening to Les Jeux. I'm going to record a few more phone calls like this to see how they work, so if you like it, let me know. Regardless, I really appreciate you listening. There's a lot of stuff out there to pay attention to, and it's really nice that you chose this.